The hamburger saved my life. I mean, literally, I would be broke, destitute. I might be somewhere dead or living rather poorly. I owe everything to the hamburger. Hey, my name is Harry Hawk, and welcome back to Talking About Everything. And today we're going to be talking about hamburgers, in particular, tiny juicy hamburgers and quarter pound juicy hamburgers. And I think this is going to be the first of many burger episodes. So I can't tell every story that I know, but burgers have really had a positive impact on my life and have allowed me to meet so many absolutely wonderful people. As always, I really encourage your feedback on this show and any others. You can find me on Twitter at HHAWK. That's H Hawk. Anyway, you know, where did it start? And I have the clearest memory that a cousin of mine had worked at McDonald's when I was an early young teen, and he actually got fired. They fired everybody in the store, which was a good, interesting lesson that that type of job, you know, wasn't secure. But I had always thus in the back of my mind that worst thing that could happen is I could flip hamburgers. And I have and will do many other things. And today I rarely touch a burger, but in fact, coming up Saturday, the 17th of January, 2015, I will be doing a burger pop-up, an afternoon event where I will be cooking my award-winning hamburger and other award-winning items. So always having had this in mind, we can fast forward to the summer of 2002. I had at that point been unemployed about a year. I was living in Brooklyn. I was barely surviving the dot-com implosion and all that that implies. And I was hanging out with a chef friend of mine. I'll mention him. We have had a interesting relationship, but beyond anything, this gentleman, I can say, is consistently produced some of the most amazing food that I've ever eaten. And so I had been drawn into his circle of influence. And the gentleman that I am talking about is Alan Harding, a fairly famous chef then and now. And I had spent a little bit of time in 2000, you know, when the dot-com stuff was flying high pre-9/11, I'd actually spent a couple days working for him, stage for free, in his kitchen in Brooklyn. And Alan and his business partner had been credited with creating the Smith Street Revolution. It was one of the most amazing little food recoveries in Brooklyn at a time when Brooklyn wasn't quite what it is today, which is quite amazing. But on the other hand, Brooklyn's always been amazing. But our story today is about the hamburger. Having worked in the kitchen with Alan, and I was preparing to sell my apartment and move out of Brooklyn, Alan and James Mamari and the Gerontano family were in the process of opening something called the Gowanus Yacht Club and Beer Garden. And that's a fairly pretentious name unless you're from Brooklyn and you know that the Gowanus was a heavily polluted canal, and that once you knew where the location of this place was, which was nowhere near the canal, but rather in a side yard above a subway stop, that it was in the same way a yacht club is big as that this was like a postage stamp. This was just a tiny little piece of land and had nothing to do with the yacht club. It was unpretentious. It was designed very simply, used furniture, some benches bolted to the ground, and a friend of Alan's had welded together a small barbecue. And Alan had the idea that at the Gowanus Yacht Club, he would basically sell hot dogs and sausages. And I figured no one really eats hot dogs these days anymore. I needed a little bit of income, and I started to work there. Asked him for the job, basically, of cooking the hot dogs. And we know cooking hot dogs is a oxymoron. Hot dogs come from the factory completely cooked. You're warming them. We created, with Alan's help and some of my input, a very interesting sausage menu, sourcing sausages from famous German producers, as well as the local Brooklyn Polish producer, Jubilat, who I've done tremendous amount of business with over the years. And so we had Polish sausages and German sausages and hot dogs. And ultimately, we added a burger to the menu. And we were cooking on this barbecue, and by we, I mean me, and we were cooking over hardwood charcoal, which, you know, runs 400 or 500 degrees, has a wonderful smell. It's very completely different than the charcoal briquette that you normally buy, which is filled. You can, when you cook in that quantity of it and you're standing over it, it's just filled with chemicals. And the briquette forms a tremendous amount of ash where the hardwood just burns. You're left with very little ash. So I started cooking hamburgers as well because people were demanding them, and it was fantastic. A hamburger patty cooked over hardwood charcoal. Fantastic. Made too much smoke and so forth, and complaints from the neighbors. And so we ended up having to pre-bake the burgers in the large revolving bagel oven that they had adjacent. And, well, we still kept hamburgers on the menu. And then in the following spring, in April of 2003, with a name coined by Alan, we opened Schnack. Schnack was supposed to be essentially, as it was described to me, sort of the yacht club, but inside. But the yacht club was basically a bar that's a beer bar, but a beer and wine bar that served a little bit of food. And Schnack served a lot of food and a little bit of beer and wine. And it would have been better to have a different ratio if I was more knowledgeable. Then, as I am now in the restaurant business, I would have insisted it be a bar that serves a little bit of food. But it was much like a little mini diner, a whole bunch of this and that, not a huge menu, but not a tiny menu either, where the Yacht Club maybe had 7 or 8 items on the menu and they were virtually all the same, a sausage. And it is within Schnack where Alan had researched and discovered the thing that would change my life. Hamburgers absolutely changed my life. Without hamburgers, I would be broke and destitute. I would not be the person that I am today. I certainly wouldn't be a educator and a marketer in the same way that I am. Alan came across a classic American technique, which is known as the smash burger. And I want to stress, because it's completely close in name to something that exists as a chain in America called Smash Burger. And it's unfortunate. They make a fantastic product, but it is the name of the technique. And so a smash burger is how many, many restaurants all across the country make hamburgers, from the famous White Manna in New Jersey to, say, the Burger Wagon in Miamisburg, Ohio, and many other places, upstate New York and so forth. And this is what really changed my life, was really mastering this technique. And I'm going to tell you some stories about it, but, you know, to put it in the context, once I started cooking hamburgers and really got to understand them, I have sold more than 100,000 hamburgers. I have won a hamburger award, the 2008 Burger Battle of the Borough. I have cooked burgers 5 times at the James Beard House, which is certainly one of the most famous and probably the most prestigious place to cook in America, and including a dinner that I did there with George and Josh Orzerski, two kind of famous hamburger guys. I cooked their first burger dinner, and I did the first Burger Bash in New York City in concert with George and Adam Kuben from then the website A Hamburger Today, and some folks like Jen Chung from The Gothamist, which is a blog or website that covers local news. Altogether, we worked out a burger bash. That's what we called it. And I think our tagline was quality, not quantity. It was really slow food. And I guess that is something that's actually very important to me. It's really hard to conceptualize this. I don't know how many of you are familiar with sort of the inside food terms and if the term, in fact, slow food means something to you. But it is a movement that comes out of Italy. And the idea is you would go into a restaurant and you would walk in. Perhaps it's Italy. You might order some wine. You order your meal. And then they go and they make the meal, which is to say, in America at that time, if you ordered the meal, almost everything would have been cooked or par cooked. Everything would have been prepped and they would just finish it. And quite frankly, that's sort of what McDonald's does today, right? Everything's almost ready. You walk in and they assemble it and put it on inside of a carton and hand it to you. In a slow food restaurant, they would make the pasta. They would take a whole onion and chop it. Nothing was done essentially in theory until you ordered it. And that's at its core, the hamburger can be like that. I have had a restaurant where I would grind the beef fresh every morning. And that's probably, you know, the one thing that if it was truly slow food, you would grind the meat to order. I think anybody who can do that is truly at the hallmark, the highest, you know, the paramount, the zenith of burgerdom, the acme of burgers is to grind the meat moments before it's cooked. But that's the thing. You can cook a hamburger from start to finish within a few minutes and serve it absolutely fresh. And when it's done properly and really cooked well, it's an enjoyable piece of meat as much as any other time that you might enjoy animal protein. So that's a fancy way of saying it's emotionally and physically as good as a piece of steak. And I'm in this whole podcast, this whole episode, I'm talking about hamburgers, which I know maybe many of you think that means also cheeseburgers. But to me, those are two different things. And I am very much, if you're asking me what I like, I am a hamburger purist. I don't put cheese on it. Cheese is one of those things that I absolutely love in the world. It's not something that I love on my hamburger, in part because if it's really done well, the cheese does not, in my opinion, help the meat. It hides it. You add ketchup, you add other kinds of seasonings and things, and it makes a fantastic sandwich, but it's not a primarily cooked beef experience, which is what a proper, perfectly done hamburger is. So at Schnack, 2003, we opened. It's really a bit of a lost leader, but we're doing little tiny hamburgers known as the sliders, and we're doing them for $1 each, which isn't to say that, you know, a meal there was completely cheap, but we certainly got people's attention. We had $1 PBRs, that's Pabst Blue Ribbon, not Patrol Boat River, and we had these $1 tiny slider burgers. The restaurant was called Schnack. That's a made-up word, although it is somebody's last name, like the famous musician A.J. Schnack. And we met the Schnack family, for some folks in Chicago, and Mary Schnack, I believe, in Phoenix or somewhere in the Southwest. So the Schnacks came out of the woodwork to meet us, which was fantastic. But we called our burger the Schnacky. And Alan had wanted to call it the Smacky, and I just like Schnacky better, and I went with that. And maybe Smashburger wouldn't have been able to kind of take that name, but the Smacky sounded too much like, you know, like a slang for heroin, and it didn't make sense to me that someone would want to eat something called Smack. And Schnacky sounded much better. And we sold our Schnackies in singles, doubles, triples, and quads, which meant you could have a burger with 1, 2, 3, or 4 patties, which made all kinds of fun on the phone when people were placing orders. Some people, although it was, in my opinion, clearly listed, didn't understand that, so they'd order a quad. They'd expect 4 burgers. They got 1 burger with 4 patties. They'd call up and say, my order's not correct. And, well, comedy ensued and fun was had by all. But Schnack, at that time, New York, America, in somewhat of a recession. At that point, McDonald's, much like today, had lost a little bit of market share. And people were out of work. The dot-com bubble had burst. And so we were new and noteworthy. Alan, of course, as a famous celebrity chef at that point, brought a tremendous amount of PR and prestige to the operation. And in fact, he had in the process at that time a television show, which ultimately got picked up for a couple seasons on the Discovery Network. And it was called Cooking in Brooklyn, and ultimately 3 episodes, included Schnack. And I did a tremendous, I really learned how to do public relations following some leads that I picked up from Alan and Jim and other people. And so Schnack was often in the news. We were on television. We did events all over the area, in which I will describe some of them now or in a future episode. But I want to convey and describe sort of the art of the smash burger. I think there's quite a bit about this that's in the press now because of the burger chain by that name, but as well as people sort of embrace the sustainability and classic methodology. The smash burger is sort of perfect in many ways. It certainly lends itself to small batches of freshly ground meat, but it certainly also works for those restaurants that bought meat two or three times a week. At Schnack, we had it come in every day, 7 days a week, from a local butcher, Las Pozanos on Smith Street. Originally, we were also getting it from one of the larger meat companies in New York, but they didn't deliver on the weekends, and it just seemed clear to me that we needed to have the meat as fresh as possible. We didn't want to grind it ourselves at that point, although later, again, as I said, I would become sort of known for that as I experienced and took on this burger mantle. So the first thing about the smash burger is it lends itself to fresh ground meat. And one of the things that's really important with that ground meat is, in fact, that you shouldn't handle it a lot. You don't want to heat it up with your hands. You don't want to over manipulate it. You don't want to compress it very much. And so how do you make a burger patty if you can't compress it? It's sort of like the cone. What is the sound of one hand clapping? What is the taste of a burger that you can't make into a patty? And the answer is it's an awesome taste. It is the smash burger. You take a food scoop, which to the uninitiated looks very much like an ice cream scoop, but it's not, it's different. And the food scoop is literally a costing mechanism. There are many different food scoops. Each one has a different colored handle, and it represents the size of the scoop, so that basically from a portionality standpoint, you can portion out something. So you might see the lady in the lunch line taking a scoop of potatoes and putting it on your tray. Well, she's using a food portioner to ensure that they're giving you the proper portion of food, either from a cost or a nutrition standpoint. The scoop that we used is a yellow handled scoop, and it makes a very small patty, which I think is also good. It's healthy. But so the idea is that you take your food scoop and you take a scoop of fresh meat. So it's never compressed. It's never really touched by a human hand. So you kind of just use your thumb or whatever digit you have available to flatten the beef. In other words, it's not a heaping scoop, but a flat top scoop. So you scoop up the meat, level it off the top with your thumb, and it goes down onto the grill. And now you can do this in a lot of different ways. There's a lot of places that will cook their smash burgers around 200 or 300 degrees, and a less skilled chef, a less skilled line cook in particular, what we're talking about, is going to continually turn down the grill, making it colder because you don't have to work as fast. But to me, a proper smash burger is going to be cooked at least at 350, up to 400 or 450, maybe even higher. I know that there are some restaurants out there that keep the flat top grill, otherwise often called a plancha, at around 650. And that would be awesome for a smash burger. But so the scoop of meat goes down on the grill, it's seasoned, and then it's immediately flipped. And the whole process of doing that is that the very bottom, the part that you flattened with your thumb, has now seared ever so slightly, but it's cooked just enough so that the next thing that you do is you smash it with a spatula. And as I would tell the folks working for me, you have to be macho. You're wrestling it to the ground. You're pinning it. You're not just giving it a light push. You're taking that spatula and you're pushing it as flat as you can. And it may get a little bit uneven. The edges may not be perfectly circular. That doesn't matter. You season it again. And then there's really only one more step that needs to happen, which is it gets one flip. And that's it. You do not touch it again. You can add a little bit more seasoning. And at the exact moment that you do that one flip, that would be the time to put some cheese on it. If you are an evil person, let's face it, I've made a lot of money selling cheese because people will pay a lot of money for it, and it costs not a lot of money depending on the kind of cheese you use. but it's one of those toppings that's incredibly profitable to sell. And so I certainly thank everybody who's bought cheese, but it's not something that I can recommend myself. We put a secret sauce, again, developed by Mr. Alan Harding, on the burger, of course, called Schnack Sauce. It's written up a little bit what's in there in the book Hamburger America. George Motes, who is a friend of mine, but I certainly endorse his book and his movie of the same title, Hamburger America, as well as his application, his iPhone app called Burger GPS. But George does have a basic recipe for something like Schnack Sauce. Of course, it's a trade secret, so we wouldn't give that out. And of course, the burger itself was seasoned with Schnack Salt. And Schnack Salt is a mix of kosher table salt and very expensive, high quality, sweet smoked paprika and other seasonings, which again, we can't disclose. At that point, the burger is done. And now to understand and describe this a little bit, from the time that that meat gets dropped onto the grill, onto the plancha, and gets flipped and smashed, and then gets that one flip as a patty and gets pulled off the grill, that whole thing you're looking at anywhere from about 45 seconds to a minute and a half. If it's taking any longer than that, your grill is not hot enough, in my opinion. Although, again, you could have a relatively cold grill and then you have plenty of time. But if this is done right, you can produce a tiny little burger that is completely seared on both sides. And that's, again, to get formal, that's a Maillard reaction, but it's the caramelization of the meat. It produces that dark brown, crusty kind of look as you would see on a fine steak. And again, if you do this perfectly and have the timing right, it is completely seared on both sides and it is still medium rare to rare on the inside. Now at Schnack, we would cook through. So we're looking more about a minute and a half on the cooking, up to 2 minutes. And it does depend. And this may seem odd in a grill that's so hot and everything. Once you start to put a bunch of meat on that grill, it actually, you know, even though gas cooking is very powerful and the grill is so hot, it can, the quantity of the meat can actually lower the temperature of the grill. Of course, even more so if you're outside. If you're outside cooking on a propane powered plancha, you can't do more than about 10 quarter pound burgers. But I digress. So in somewhere between 45 seconds and in a minute and a half, you can cook a perfect little mini slider smashed in the classic American tradition. This burger will be juicy and tasty. And now here is the real special thing about this technique that no one talks about. Every burger contest that I've been in, they ask for medium rare. Everybody's fixated on rare and medium. Cooked in this style, which again is dropped, flipped, smashed, and then only one more flip, salted on both sides once, and cooked rapidly. When cooked through, which is to say medium well to well, the burger that I'm describing is not only perfect on the outside, and even though it's well done on the inside, it's completely juicy and delicious. And even though I rather have a rare burger or a medium rare burger, my burger, well done, is as delicious as it is when it's medium or rare. And that is what sets this burger technique apart from any other, because it retains all of the juices. Anytime you see somebody smashing a burger when it is already started to cook, you know, anywhere after 5, 10, or 20 seconds, or if you see someone especially repeatedly smashing a burger, they're pushing the fat out and the juices. They are drying out a burger. And if you like your burger leathery and dry, then that's the correct technique to use. But if you like your burger tasty and delicious, never smash your burger more than once. Only flip once and you will have the perfect burger. I recommend that you try this at home. And there are so many stories about burgers that I have to tell you. I'm going to tell one more story and then I am going to end this episode, but I am definitely going to be back on this particular podcast talking about everything with Harry Hawk. We are going to talk about burgers, I don't know, once a month. a couple times a year. It's up to you. If you love hearing about burgers and you love hearing about my burger stories, let me know. So my favorite, well, one of my most favorite stories is the restaurant Schnack was in Red Hook, Brooklyn. And Red Hook, Brooklyn is an amazing place. It is one of the oldest established neighborhoods in New York. It existed before the British came. It was a Dutch colonized area. Red Hook, Brooklyn was one of the most busiest parts of Brooklyn historically before Brooklyn was connected to Manhattan. If you think about the movie On the Waterfront with Marlon Brando, it was, I believe, filmed in Hoboken, but the actual location that it's supposed to be is Red Hook. And it describes the scene, the life in Red Hook, where you had warehouses and you had ships and stevedores and people unloading boats and warehouses and people dying in warehouse accidents. And at one point, there were 50,000 single men living in that neighborhood, or at least working there on the docks. This was a place that if you lacked an education but had some brawn in the 1830s or 40s or 50s, you could certainly work there all the way up through the 1920s and 30s and 40s. Red Hook did fall on some hard times. But at the time that Schnack opened, there was still, and there still is, an existing container port in Red Hook, known as the Red Hook Container Port. And they were very much fighting for their lives. They feared that certain political powers would turn their probably 100 acres of container port into prime waterfront real estate. And the life on the waterfront, notwithstanding its romantic nature, these were essentially blue-collar jobs that paid somewhere between $80,000 and $120,000 a year. And you just can't make up a blue-collar job like that. You can't replace those kind of jobs. So these were real jobs where men and women would work and support their families, and still do. And they were trying to get some political power, some basic just communication through the press. And I thank all the people, Matt Yates and the Carlucci family, who afforded me the opportunity to work with them. And what we did, we created a number of different things. But one big thing that we did was a hamburger eating contest. They wanted to show the container port management wanted to show that there were people working there, real working people. And so we went down to the dock with a whole bunch of hamburgers that had been cooked at the restaurant. And we had a whole bunch of stevedores lined up. And we did this wonderful hamburger eating contest. We made, of course, the local newspaper. We made the local magazines. And most importantly, we made the local evening news. But to be on the water so close to see, you know, the very lifeblood of the economy, the import and export of goods and services. And uniquely, this port at that point was the largest importer, largest port that import the, how to say this properly, this was the port that imported to the U.S. the most amount of cacao beans, and which you use to make chocolate, than any other port in the country. But again, hundreds of men and women who work there, and obviously they're still there. I can't claim that a hamburger saved their lives, saved their jobs, but it certainly helped to contribute to that. And as I've said, the hamburger has saved my life, and I can explain more in detail all about that in future episodes. For the moment, again, I really welcome your feedback. If you like this, please let me know. If you were a customer at Schnack and you have some memories, I'd love to talk to you. We can connect on Skype and you can share that with me, or you can send me an email. You can communicate with me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is HHAWK, or at HHAWK. And I'd very much like to hear from you if you've gotten this far into the podcast. You can find this podcast at talkingabouteverything.com. And you can also find my marketing website, hawksocialmarketing.com, on the web. Anywhere that you can find your web browser, you can find me. And you can certainly find me by going into Google and typing Harry Hawk Hamburger, or Harry Hawk Beach, or even Harry Hawk Burger King. And you'll see a picture of me when I won the 2008 Burger Battle of the Boroughs. I think that will be the first story that I'll tell the next time we talk about hamburgers. My name is Harry Hawk. I hope for those of you who eat burgers, that all your burgers are juicy and tasty. This is Harry Hawk saying, I hope everybody has a great week. Bye-bye.